Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now to what I think is a really important story for us all to hear. This is a great, truly Australian story, which began 80 years ago with the remarkable passion and compassion of one man, the Reverend Robert Hammond. He was the Anglican minister at St Barnabas Church, Broadway, in the inner city of Sydney. Moved by deep compassion as he witnessed firsthand the plight of the poor, the unemployed, the alcoholics, the destitute of the Great Depression, he actually did something about it. He did a great deal about it. He set up relief centres, an employment bureau, a soup kitchen, an emergency depot to lend a helping hand to thousands in the grip of poverty, deprivation and depression. One of them was the famed Eternity Man, Arthur Stace. Robert Hammond eventually established a housing company and, consider this, cashed in his life insurance to buy a large tract of land, which today is an entire suburb which bears his name, Hammondville. All this went on to become the Hammond Care organisation, which is today pioneering work in aged care and especially dementia. I reckon there's much for us to learn and ponder deeply about the practical Christianity and true Christian charity that Hammond embodied and championed. My next guest says this is an essential part of what it means to follow Jesus, that each person is made in God's image and is intrinsically valuable. Meredith Lake is an historian who spent 5 years researching and writing this significant episode of Australia's Christian heritage, and her book, Faith in Action, is to be launched this week. Meredith, welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
It's great to meet you. Congratulations on a wonderful contribution to us all. Paint us a picture, a personal picture, of the Reverend Robert Hammond and what drove this exceptional individual.
Well, by the time we meet Hammond in the thick of the Depression, he's in his early 60s, having lived a remarkable life already. He's tall, he's imposing, he's got a thick Scottish accent, balding on his head, but a friendly, grandfatherly kind of man. He'd had some personal tragedy in his life. He had married in his 30s and lost his only child at just 4 weeks of age. As an adult, I think shown a particular heart for children, and that's part of what he wanted to do with the Depression, was to help the children whose parents were out of work and who couldn't put a roof over their heads. But he'd worked as a clergyman in the inner suburbs of Sydney, around Surrey Hills, before moving to Broadway, which at that time was very poor. Lots of workers, lots of underemployed and underskilled labourers. And when the Depression hit, he was in the midst of those who were felt its effects most keenly and most devastatingly.
What were the things that formed his Christian thought as opposed to his practical Christianity?
For Hammond, there was little division between the practical and the intellectual, and that was his great genius in many ways. But he'd grown up in Melbourne. He'd been a very good AFL footballer. He was a muscular Christian, if you like, a man's Christian. As a high schooler, he'd been the school captain. He'd been in the first side for his school and then played in the junior ranks of Essendon. And then had, I think, a kind of conversion experience as a young man and gone straight into ministry. He'd worked among all kinds of labouring communities for a few years around Victoria and then moved to Sydney just at the turn of the century. He'd had a parish that included a lot of wharf labourers down the Darling Harbour docks, and then got a parish in Surrey Hills where he worked, again, among the people who really did it the toughest. This idea of practical Christianity, which really sums up Hammond and his ministry, has a long heritage. It's an idea of Christianity that it's not just a faith in terms of doctrinal assent, saying, yes, I believe A, B and C. It's not just either a matter of getting on with the job, but a matter of personal relationship with Jesus and acting out your devotion to him by love for God and love for others. It's quite a simple faith, but it has radical consequences, as it did for Wilberforce with his campaign both to abolish the slave trade, but also with the reform of morals and holy living. And those two streams, the concern for society and the concern for personal piety, those two things come together in these practical Christians, which goes from Wilberforce down through to Hammond.
And in terms of practicality, I'm struck by the breadth of things that he did to help the poor.
It's quite amazing, extraordinary, yes. Isn't it? I think he had a very holistic understanding of the people he was helping. They weren't just people who needed to be in church, and they weren't just people who needed a meal on the table. Hammond used to reflect, I think, on the story of Zacchaeus. He was a tax collector who was an outcast in his own society, to whom Jesus said, why don't you come and take me to lunch at your place? And Zacchaeus then having a transformative encounter with Jesus and going on. And Hammond, I think, realized that having a meal with someone could bring meaning, could bring hope, as well as obviously a full stomach.
And it certainly did. Paint us a picture of the many thousands that he helped and what their lives were like.
Well, I think Hammond's main heart was for other men. This was a time in Sydney and across the nation, really, when men were deserting the church. You were ending up with a lot of women in the pews and the men just nowhere to be seen. And Hammond had a particular concern about that. But he also did realise that it wasn't a matter of just getting the men to come to church, but to take the church to the men in their workplaces, in their homes, where they're spending time together. By seeking out men, particularly working class men, he encountered some fairly rough types, people with long-term addictions, people with terrible struggles with alcoholism, men who were underemployed and some who just never really got a chance to do something that gave them dignity. Because he was living in the most difficult part of Sydney, Surry Hills and then Broadway, that was where the slum population of Sydney really lived.
Yes.
That's who he was encountering on a day-to-day basis and who he most sought to help.
Many thousands he
yes,
helped.
Yes, by the depression.
Yeah.
By the depression.
Men and women and kids. Lots of kids.
And all their dependents. Yes. By helping the man, you could help the whole family in Hammond's thinking, because the man had a wife, the man had children, and so by helping the breadwinner, as it was in those days, you could support a whole family.
And as I said, one of them was Arthur Stace. Tell us briefly his story with
Hammond.
That's right.
Stace is a Sydney icon.
Yes. The Eternity Man.
The Eternity Man. And he's well known, isn't he, for that one-word sermon all over the pavement.
Yep.
But he was in his mid-40s by the time the Depression hit. He'd already lived a very difficult life, weighed down by alcoholism since his teens, and then probably nearly two decades of a very shady existence around Sydney. A lot of semi-legal and illegal activity in and out of prison and hospital. And in desperation, he walked in to, well, it had a strange name, the St. Barnabas Brotherhood of Christian Men, which was a Wednesday night meeting that Hammond ran to invite people to faith and temperance. And you could get a cup of tea and something to eat and hear a sermon custom made for the working men of Sydney. And Stace turned up at one of these meetings, heard Hammond preach. As he said, he went in for a rock cake and came out with the Rock of Ages, having had a conversion experience, gave up the grog on the spot, and from then on actually became one of Hammond's associates and contributed in a very mighty way to all Hammond's efforts to help the needy.
It's one of many wonderful stories for us to ponder deeply, I think. Hammond wasn't just a soft touch, though, because he was very tough on the causes of some of these ills, especially the grog.
That's right. He was perhaps one of the time's most prominent temperance crusaders. Mm. He campaigned very strongly around Australia. He was probably in his own day most famous in some ways as a crusader against alcohol and its consumption. He even travelled internationally in that cause. He went to Hawaii and had a bit of a profile as a temperance crusader. He could see in the lives of the people around him that a drug addiction, in his case, alcoholism, could have devastating effects on a person, their life, their capacity to be who they could be. And he thought that in order to bring hope and transformation, you needed to deal with the things that were weighing a man down.
Then came a really defining decision, and a decision that was so visionary and very entrepreneurial, to set up a housing company, of all things, and purchase this land out of his own superannuation.
It's a remarkable...
Yeah. Just before he needed it.
That's right. As I said, he was in his early 60s by the time the Depression hit. He, I think, realised that you could put soup in a man's bowl, you could help him mend his shirt, shine his shoes, have a shave before his next job interview. But at the end of the day, that didn't deal with the big crises of unemployment and particularly homelessness. It makes sense, really, that if you lost your job, you couldn't pay your rent. This was a time when the government might give you a pair of work boots, they might give you some vouchers to exchange for food, but there was no rent assistance. And for many of the unemployed of the 1930s, losing your job meant losing your home. And Hammond realised that that was a major crisis that nobody really was doing much about. The government certainly had no housing for the unemployed, and so he thought, I need to put a roof over the heads of these families and give them an opportunity to have a new start in life and to make something of it and to be independent and to have a dignified existence, really, as a family.
And many of them were housed in this suburb now known and continues as Hammondville.
That's right. So he bought a tract of land out of his own life insurance, the equivalent, as you said, of cashing his superannuation right on the eve of needing it. And he bought what was actually just a big tract of bush out in the sticks. It's on the southwestern fringe of Sydney. It's still on the southwestern fringe of Sydney. Yes. And it's a long way from anywhere at the time. The main road, which is now a highway, was a dirt track, muddy, full of potholes, in the middle of nowhere. They had to clear the trees. He called it a pioneer home scheme, I think, because it had that kind of pioneering feel. And he put up these basic little wooden shacks, 9 to start with, and then offered them to tenants as homes and land that they could gradually pay off interest-free. So he was offering these people a stake in the country, a home of their own.
And at the time, all of those homes were built by volunteers. We've actually been fortunate enough to have obtained an albeit scratchy recording of Robert Hammond himself talking about those volunteers. Have a listen.
With the true Australian spirit of comradeship, they did magnificent work. Their only reward is the happiness that their voluntary labours will bring to people who have been living with the black fear of homelessness hanging over their heads. I like to visualise the pioneer settlement expanding, giving the priceless boons of health and happiness to many more unfortunate citizens. This will be possible when more people catch the volunteer spirit of these unemployed boys who toil so willingly to make the pioneer home settlement a reality.
That's the voice of Robert Hammond from 1933. And Meredith, I love the heartfelt tribute that the then Archbishop paid to Robert Hammond at Hammond's funeral. Thousands lined the streets outside the cathedral. He defined him as a friend of prisoners, drunkards, clods, fools, misfits, scholars and illiterates. And I think he remains to this day a great example of what he called that practical Christianity, matching good head knowledge of the Bible, theology, with a good heart.
That's right. And that generous heart combined with that sharp wit and that bold vision for helping the needy really was Hammond's great strength and genius. And it made a practical difference. To get a house at Hammondville, you had to be unemployed, you had to have an eviction notice on you, and 3 or more children. And these were the families that he rescued by accommodating at Hammondville.
On Open House, we're with Meredith Lake, author of Faith in Action, The Story of Hammond Care. So Hammond died in 1946, Meredith. The work over the ensuing years was really headed up by 2 men, a remarkable father and son, carrying on this baton of practical Christianity and building on much of it. First, Bernard Judd, who was a real zealot and a real devotee, a young firebrand follower of Hammond.
That's right. Bernard Judd had begun attending Hammond's church and involving himself in the many ministries there as a young man, and married, actually, Hammond's personal secretary. Like many people who knew Hammond, was deeply inspired by this visionary Christian man and what he was doing to transform people and indeed the city. And with Hammond's passing, he wanted to continue that work. Only Bernard Judd came to the leadership of the organisation at a time when unemployment and associated homelessness was no longer the burning issue that it had been in the early 30s. The question in the 1940s was, well, who are the new needy? Who should we be helping in the spirit of Canon Hammond and indeed of Jesus?
And more pioneering work then followed with aged care.
That's
so
right.
We accept that now, but it was very significant.
Well, aged accommodation, as we now know it, hadn't been invented at the time that Bernard Judd and his colleagues embraced it as the new cause. Mm. At that time, there was obviously the Second World War was going on, and in many ways, the obvious people to help were ex-servicemen, widows, war widows, and their children. And many charities did indeed make that their priority. But Bernard Judd and his colleagues had the insight, I think, to recognise a slow-burning but very significant issue, and that was the needs of aged pensioners. This was a time when the state government only ran 3 what were called asylums for the aged. A public hospital, the Sydney Morning Herald reported, wouldn't even take a chronically ill older person if they were over 75. And there were charities trying to run kind of homes for the dying, they were often called, with maybe 8 or 10 beds where a nurse might care for someone in their last months. But if you were poor and you were old and you got sick, there was nowhere really you could go. And they had the insight and the vision to say, we're going to do something about that. We know how to build homes. We know how to build community. We know how to love the needy. Let's embrace these people, these members of our society, and put a roof over their heads.
And subsequently, Bernard Judd's son Stephen took over the organisation and then has taken it to a whole new level. And that process continues to today, doesn't it?
Certainly. And there were several twists and turns along the way. Yeah. And several people who made quite stunning contributions in terms of recognising new needs. At the time, Bernard Judd embraced pensioners. To help the old was the same thing in many ways as to help people in poverty. As the 20th century progressed, however, the economic status of older people changed and generally improved. To be old no longer means to be poor, as it did in the mid-20th century.
Or put in an asylum.
That's right, yeah. Certainly not. And so, who are the new needy? That question, who is needy in the Australian community, has continued to change. And the charity, under the leadership of Stephen Judd and other people, Chris Gardner, Teresa Kramer, other members of the organisation at that time, realised that within the older population, there were still pockets of very needy people, particularly those with dementia, which is a condition that affects a remarkable proportion of people, especially as they get older. And again, in the mid-90s, when Hammond Care embraced the needs of people with dementia and sought to provide homes and real care for them, that was not something that governments or charities really had much of a grip on.
More revolutionary thinking.
Yeah. That's right. And how to actually put the people and their needs at the centre of the way you care, rather than the condition and the disease at the centre of how you care.
And now that it's widely accepted, they are at the leading edge of care in Australia.
That's right. Yeah. Whether it's in accommodating people with dementia or caring for them in their own homes or providing spiritual care, nurturing their emotional health, tackling depression in the aged, in all these ways, Hammond Care have remained innovative and bold.
The other thread that continues in lots of ways is their commitment to this practical Christianity. They keep on working at what this means and how we can maintain it. It's not to be lost.
That's right. What does it mean to help the needy in a Christian way? That's a question that at its finest moments, Hammond Care's really grappled with. Often the answer has had something to do with dealing with the whole person. They're not just someone with a physical need or an economic need or a medical need. They're a whole person with a relationships, with emotional needs, part of a community, with aspirations and dreams just like the rest of us. And engaging with the whole person and their condition in that context is part of what it means, I think, to be a practical Christian, to get on with the job of helping the whole person.
So if you have Christian faith, or not actually, because the care of the poor is a universal thing, or should be, how should we reflect on the story of Hammond Care and what lays at the core of what they do?
Well, I think one of the great enduring gifts that this organisation and Hammond, its founder, have given to our national community is the gift of hope, really. Everybody needs a bit of hope, and sometimes there's all kinds of roadblocks, all kinds of reasons why we don't have it. Maybe it's because dementia has weighed us down. Maybe it's because we've lost our job and we've been struggling for 5 years. But realising that there is someone actually who'll care for you, that there is a way of living and of being that's nurtured and embraced and welcomed, that's something to be celebrated, really, that people can care and do care. But I think there's a challenge in it too. At different times, this organisation and Hammond, its founder, gave to the poor in ways that were really very costly to themselves and really remarkably generous. Yes. They didn't look after themselves first or say, well, when my circumstances get better, then I'll help someone else. But they gave out of their own pockets and their own energies at great cost and at the same time as a great blessing to the person who received that care.
You've lived with this story now for 5 years. How has it impacted you personally?
I've felt that challenge to be more generous at greater cost to myself. I'm a believer myself, and as an example of how to follow Jesus on a day-to-day basis, I've found it really compelling. Yeah. If we start to look around, there are many needy people. I would never really have thought much about the aged at this particular stage of my own life, but realizing that wherever people are up to, there's a way you can get alongside them and show a bit of love and maybe be a bit creative, a bit bold, even a bit innovative in doing that. It's a great example of how to do that and of why we need Christian organisations to get on with the job of practical Christianity.
Hear, hear. Meredith Lake, I think, as I said, it's an important contribution, a vitally important contribution for lots of good reasons. The book is Faith in Action, and we'll put the link and details up for it on our Open House Community Facebook page. Meredith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.